Hi, and thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Today I am joined by Rhys Wabara, and we talk about everything from his school background to learning the ropes of business to building resilience and about everything in between. We talk about what you should be if you want to be hired by Rhys, and what type of life you need to live to have a company his size. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode, particularly if you're interested in being an entrepreneur and particularly if you're interested in building a big company to be able to see what it's really like. Enjoy. Welcome.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. I'm going to start with some quick fire questions. Are you ready?
Go.
Reading or podcasts?
Reading.
Time blocking or winging it?
Time blocking.
Airplane mode or notifications on?
Notifications on.
More or less than 8 hours sleep?
Less.
Office or working from home?
Office.
Early bird or night owl?
Both.
Oh, it's a terrible combination.
AKA no sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
Fair, we'll probably have bags now, but it's all good. We move.
Do you want to borrow some concealer?
No, I'm
okay, so I want to start with your story and how you got to where you are today. So you started MDV when you were playing professional football. Why did you start working on MDV?
There's a few things, really. I mean, fashion was always my natural understanding. When I was 16 and turning up to training, and I remember actually was 17 is when we transitioned into like the first team training ground, and I was wearing some stuff which I probably shouldn't have wore at the time because it's a bit flamboyant, but I think people could tell I was dressed a little different or thought a little different. So that was my natural understanding. And Lewis, who was the founder of Gymshark and my best friend since 12 years old, he was just started Gymshark at the time. So I think Gymshark may have been 18 months old. And he basically said to me, oh, you should just do something in fashion, you know, create some clothes. You have resources with football in terms of, you know, people, and Instagram was in the infancy then. So the reach was very vast and promotion was cheap, so good timing in that aspect. And it was a case of just trying to find the products I wanted, which I didn't want to pay thousands of pounds for, and kind of putting them all in one retailer. So it was a case of kind of buying samples and just changing this, that and the other on Photoshop, sending it to supply, getting samples, and just launching the product. So it was a bit of both. It was a case of natural understanding, a push from a friend, and I had to do the rest, I guess.
You said there about good timing. How much do you think success is good timing versus other aspects?
I think it's definitely important with starting a business. It runs out after 2 or 3 years. And when you do something cool and it's the first, you're definitely going to have copycats. So then the market gets saturated. So I think to get a head start is definitely important. It's not just the idea, it's the social sphere and what can help drive that as well. So I think definitely, you know, there's very talented people and they've got their timing wrong and it seems like nothing works. And then all of a sudden they catch their break and they boom. So I think it's important in the start. But after 3-5 years, you know, you've got to have skill to keep growing, because anyone can have, 12 months to 24 months of growth and then it starts to plateau. So I think it's important at the start, but it runs out.
And I'm interested in, so I know that you, Lewis, Ben, a number of other people went to the same school. Has your school ever got in touch and said, like, how on earth have we produced this many, like really fascinating and successful business leaders so early on?
Yeah, honestly, I think when it's all said and done, there's got to be some form of documentary on it, because we all so normal. The school is public. None of us were particularly intelligent. Me, Rhys and Lewis are very close. Ben, not so close. But me, Rhys and Lewis, from I moved to that area when I was like 13, I think. 12, 13, yeah. We've all been really close until this day. And one thing we all share is exactly the same personalities in terms of no excuses, very resilient, obsessed with everything we do. And I think that's the course of success. And I think, again, that goes to show your friendship circle is imperative. If I hadn't played football and those guys didn't see me earning a decent amount of money at 19 years old, maybe Lewis wouldn't have been inspired to, he saw me having nice cars at 19, 20. Yeah. I want to have nice cars, and then vice versa. If Lewis hadn't have done business, me and Rhys may have not done business. Yeah. So, you know, your friends are your driving force. But yeah, that school is a pure fluke, because, like I said, it's just a public basic school. And I think people may look at it and go, oh, they had some crazy education. But no, none of us are intelligent in a school format.
And for people who don't know, who might be listening, could you give a brief intro? So Lewis Morgan is one of the founders of Gymshark.
Lewis, founder of Gymshark. Ben, founder of Gymshark. Reese, founder of Able, which is an activewear brand growing extremely fast. And those are the four, really. Obviously, Gymshark has grown exponentially, and I think it was the first unicorn in Britain. And I can vouch for both of them. I mean, I remember when they were starting with £1,000 each, effectively. And at the time, I said to them both, if you need anything, just let me know, like, yeah, money-wise. And they was like, no, you know, we're just growing slowly. And it goes to show that with just resilience and passion and understanding, you can grow a business to crazy heights. And but I used to, so at the time it was football, MDV and the rap shop. So I would go to training, which I think at the time I was at Doncaster alone. Take me 2 hours to drive there. Then I'd drive to the rap shop, check what's going on, see the staff there, then drive to the MDV office and then do that every single day. Looking back, I didn't know how I did that. I was probably exhausted, yeah, like at a different level. But yeah, after. But on the topic of that, I mean, again, going back to natural understanding and passion, I loved cars. Probably wasn't the most savvy business move, don't get me wrong, but it was cool.
Yeah, but also I'm sure like you had quite a comfortable situation with football. So it takes something extra as well for you to want to do the other things too, because you know you could have come home and lived like a very happy, like relaxed, obviously like affluent lifestyle. What kind of made you want to do more than that?
I think affluence relative, do you know what I mean? I appreciate definitely in the circumstance I was, in the age I was definitely blessed and lucky, but in the football terms it was average. So and that being average doesn't sit well with me, so I feel like the passion comes from just wanting to be exceptional and not to prove anything to anyone but for myself. The rap shop was never going to be exceptional, let's keep it real, but in fashion, I know obviously we're still growing, I think we can be, so it's just a drive from within of to be as best as best I possibly can be.
Yeah, for sure. I always think that my background in music taught me everything I needed to know about kind of hard work and talent. You can have like all the talent in the world, but talent combined with hard work will beat you every day of the week. Did football teach you anything similar, and do you think hard work wins over talent?
Yeah, it does win over talent most of the time. Football taught me a lot of things. Resiliency, because you get rejected constantly. You can either create a monster of determination or a monster of excuses. And it was this person's fault, this person's fault. And the first and second time I would point fingers. And then after that, you have to spot a trend, I guess, and look within. I think the last few times the business didn't help, because it looked like my focus was split. And I understand that now I'm older, but it definitely taught me resilience, determination, and you just got to do whatever it takes to get where you want. And for me personally, if I want to do something, I'll do whatever it takes. And I think a truly determined person who wants to be successful, they'll do whatever needs to be done to get there.
To develop resilience, you kind of needed to. It wasn't just about going through things; it was also about actually understanding the need to take responsibility. Do you think that was something that kind of like hit you at one point, or did you just start having to take responsibility, I guess, and be like, okay, this is happening, rather than a chip on my shoulder, I'm actually going to develop this into sort of like a driving factor in what I'm going to do next?
Yeah, I think, as I said, I mean, it could be business, relationships, and one or two times you can just say, oh, circumstantial, but if it's three, four, five times and the pattern keeps emerging, you've got to, at this point, spot the dots and connect the dots and say, maybe it's me. And also, I think reading circa 22, 23 quite extensively, and most of those books and the self-help books all alluded to the same type of mentality of taking accountability. And I was like, okay, well, here's the dots to connect. I've read this. These people are successful. I also be accountable. And I probably take too much accountability now. For example, in a business, you have to hire people and you have to hold people accountable to do their job. But because I'm so ingrained to say, even if they do their job wrong, it's my fault because I'm the leader.
But that's a founder's job, or the CEO's job especially. You know, it all comes down to you. You get the wins. You also have to take the losses.
Yeah, but sometimes I think, if someone's paid to do their job and you still make excuses and say it's your fault for them not doing their job, there has to be a middle ground, you know what I mean? Like, overall, you must hold yourself accountable. But if you're paying someone and this is your job, bro, they must do that too.
I want to talk about MDV a little and the kind of brand behind it and what it symbolises. So why was centering around design, but at an accessible price point, important to you as MDV's USP? Of course, kind of at the time, you could access high fashion. You were, I guess, wearing that as a way of expressing yourself and as a way of kind of expressing your fashion sense. Why did you want to make that something that kind of changed the view of what luxury was?
Because I was tired. I never could fathom the mentality of spending thousands of pounds on cotton. Effectively, it's the cost price is the same for most products, give or take, like exotic leathers, etc. So, and I also was a big admirer of Zara.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
How they kind of, you know, that's what they do. They was really the only people on the high street that I could identify men and women of all kind of ages and demographics would go to. So I was kind of like, okay, how do I make something similar but in a more edgy manner for a younger demographic at this point? And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to have high-end, edgy looks but make it accessible to the masses, and there was no one doing that at the time. And even to this day, not really, do you know what I mean? And I guess that's why I was still able to grow, and because the philosophy ingrained in myself and the team is they know what makes us different from everybody else.
Yeah, and I guess that comes with challenges as well. How kind of hard is it to get fashion forward, boundary pushing pieces taken up by the lower price point market? Because I mean, the way I see it, if there's something that's particularly boundary pushing and particularly design forward, it looks different if it's £2,000 versus, you know, £50 or like whatever it might be. How difficult is that uptake?
I think it's every year I find myself understanding what makes a high level designer product high quality, and it's not necessarily a change in fabric, it's the execution. And I guess that same mentality applies in life. It's not the idea, it's the execution. So it's literally the person who's creating that product, have they took attention to detail in every aspect, and do they understand what a high quality garment kind of entails? But it is difficult, and again, it's every year. We plan 6-7 months in advance, and by the time it comes online, I'm like, I know I could have done this, and this better. I think you have to immerse yourself in high quality, which is difficult if you can't afford to buy expensive clothes and you really want to get into a clothing business. You've got to live and breathe it, and that could just be going to the shops, touching, feeling, trying it on, and just thinking, okay, like I said, spotting and connecting the dots.
Well, I always think the entrepreneurs and especially founder CEOs, that one of their real strengths is always attention to detail, I find. Do you think that is kind of a key thing you have to have as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, but you also have to have equally as good as seeing the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. I think you can get too caught up in the small details and miss what the whole aim is. So it's a fine art, to be honest, by as far as product's concerned, taking attention to detail and everything, but then not getting too caught up on one product that you miss. Okay, I'm missing the point of the business here. Yeah. So it's definitely super important, but I think you find that with a lot of creative people, they get so obsessed with a certain idea that they miss the point in the end.
What makes you hire someone into your team?
I can see in people's eyes when they will do whatever it takes to be successful and succeed in their craft. And you can ask certain people certain questions, and the answers they give you will kind of reveal all. If I ask people, what do you want to be in 5 years? And if someone just says like one role above what they want to be, they're probably not ambitious enough. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You need kind of people who are big thinkers and would do whatever it takes. And character is a big one. And just honest people, do you know, like I think for a business to succeed and the standards to maintain, you've got to, everybody has to be comfortable having difficult conversations with one another. Not difficult in a sense of screaming, shouting, calling people bad names, but saying, this isn't good enough, we need to improve, you can do better. And vice versa to me, I expect if I don't do my job, the staff to say, come together and say, Reese, in a respectful manner, we don't think you're heading in the right path. And I think as long as people could not get defensive, take that on board and understand that everybody is on the same vision, the same path, that's how businesses grow, I think.
How do you make sure that there's a balance between the kind of ambition and commitment and also making sure that they're, you know, not running themselves into the ground and therefore making mistakes quicker or getting burnt out and all of that?
Yeah, good question. It's a difficult balance. I think if you're obsessed, it doesn't feel like work anyway. It's just a natural calling. I think you feel more burnt out when you're applying yourself to areas which you don't have a natural passion to. It feels like work then, do you know what I mean? So I think, going back to what I said, the most important thing is hiring people who are really obsessed with what they do. Because when times get tough, and they always do, you can pull through it. To keep going and keep pushing, you've got to have some burning desire, which is bigger than you, bigger than money, bigger than family. It's almost like a purpose of a greater good. And I don't know what that greater good is in fashion, but I think it's just, I guess it's just the desire to be great.
Yeah. And with that, how quickly do you think that people should hire at the beginning of their business's journey?
It depends how fast your business is growing. The most important thing as a founder is to understand every role. I've had conversations with many people and they say, actually, you know, you should hire people to do what you're not good at. And that's true, but you still must be good at it. And then you find people who are great at it. There's a difference, you know what I mean? Because if you aren't good at it and you find it an area of business which you don't quite understand, or you find it tricky or tedious, you'll hire someone and they'll eventually be able to pull the wool over your eyes, because they'll be explaining stuff to you which you'll have no idea. You don't know how long things take, you don't know how intricate things are, and on the contrary, if it is tedious and you don't understand how tedious it is, and someone's saying this is really difficult, you may not value that person's time. You may say, why is it not done faster, when it does take a long time. So understand each role, be good at it, then hire people who are great at it. The aspect is that you have to be on the ground floor, you have to be there with your staff, you have to understand what they do, and again, to truly empathise with how hard they work, you have to understand what they do. And again, just a natural curiosity. I think as a business, you can't have one thing good and three things crap. You've got to have everything moving in sync, so it's important to understand all those moving parts, and then slot people in where necessary.
Yeah, 100%. So obviously you are a big fan of reading. When did that begin?
Yeah, like 22, 23, probably when I started the business.
How come? Was it just a hobby? Was it something you thought that you needed to be doing?
I think I may have been watching like YouTube, and I think I heard people referencing Rich Dad Poor Dad quite a lot. And I was like, okay, I keep hearing this book mentioned. Maybe I should read it. And then I think once you read a good book, you become obsessed. And you want to find more good books, because once you're hooked and you're learning and you can take it in and action it, it's quite a nice cycle to be in. So,
and for people wanting to kind of integrate that idea of self-learning into their everyday, what would you recommend they start doing?
Understand your learning, what you learn best from. I learn visually and kind of reading and going into my head. And some people learn by listening. So understand that, then find those assets in that channel. Don't just read or listen because people seem to be doing that. Do it because you want to do that, and listen to the people that really make you tick, because reading is difficult sometimes, you know. When you've got a complex book, it's like almost a task to get through it. But when you've got a good book, you don't want to put the thing down. So just test and learn, you know.
Yeah, 100%. We hear every day about kind of CEOs who wake up at 4 a.m. and read 3 books a week. Do you think that type of routine is essential for building, say, an £100 million business like yours? Or
no, I think that's for Instagram. You know, You see those Instagram pages which have all of the quotes and whatnot. I think they just sell dreams, to be honest, or try and create a vision of a lifestyle and overcomplicate things. And waking up at 4 and reading 3 is not for everyone at all, nor is it healthy, to be honest. I think reading is definitely important. I think all good leaders are readers, for sure. But you have to fit it around your lifestyle. Don't just think, I need to read, I'm going to be successful. It doesn't work like that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
And how do you, I know obviously you do read a lot, and as you said, like you don't sleep probably as much as you should. How do you then combat, I guess, this idea of like this crazy working, no sleeping CEO and create a more realistic view for people who follow you or for people who kind of look up to you?
It depends what you want to be. I mean, I definitely believe you can work 8 hours a day and be successful as long as you use those 8 hours in subjects that really move the needle. But if you want to create a business which is 50 mil, 100 mil a year, of course you're going to have to work extremely hard. And also, that's not for everybody. You've got to take certain sacrifices which people may not be prepared to do. So I think you can be successful. You can have a comfortable lifestyle by working 8 hours a day. And I think, again, going back to Instagram, there's this facade of like, oh, everybody wants to own a business which is turning over multi-millions pounds a year. But even myself, I mean, like I said, I love what I do in fashion, but when you get to a certain point, the enjoyment factor does decrease naturally because you have more responsibility, you have more pressure, because when you're growing that fast, if the growth slows, the staff are going to be looking at me thinking, he's done, do you know what I mean? He's not got nothing left in the tank. And that's a pressure that people don't understand. And you also, you're playing against yourself. Like when every year now, I'm playing against me. So I think the best thing to do is, you know, only play against yourself. Understand what you want to achieve. Do you want to have a huge business or do you want to have a comfortable lifestyle? If you want a huge business, yeah, sacrifices are huge. Mm-hmm. Work rate's crazy. But if you want to be successful, understand what moves the needle and focus on that.
I think a lot more we need to be looking at what success is to ourselves rather than what success looks like on the outside.
Yeah, especially as far as fame is concerned. I definitely don't want to be famous. I appreciate I may be well known in certain circumstances, but I definitely would never want to be famous. I think a lot of people who say they want to be famous, when they are, become famous and it's intoxicating. You can't do this, you can't go there, you can't do wild, crazy stuff. People say they want to be rich, but then you've got all the people asking for favours, asking for handouts. So that's the thing people forget. And you're absolutely right with what success looks like for you, because success can be just having a happy family and waking up every morning with people you love and being happy and comfortable. For some people, that will never be enough. Again, people have to look in the mirror and ask themselves, what do I truly want? Without any kind of Instagram pull, any social pull, ask yourself what makes you tick and just go for that. Forget about everybody else.
Has your idea of success and kind of what you want from it changed as, you know, the business has grown and everything?
No, never. I've always liked nice things because I like design and taste, etc. But I also know that those things mean absolutely nothing. If I don't have them, I don't care at all. My vision of success is building a business with people you love, staff you love, seeing them grow, seeing them achieve their dreams. The smile on their faces is it makes my day more than anything. I mean, my finance director will have meetings and he'll probably laugh when he hears this and he'll be like, Reese, we're doing this, this is this, this, and here. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, that doesn't really, as much as that's my job, it doesn't really get me excited. And vice versa, if we're having a bad month, I'm like, okay, cool. Like, we'll just do our best, strategize properly and effectively, and we land where we land, you know what I mean? And my joy definitely comes through other people, my family, seeing my close friends win. And ultimately, obviously, I don't know if this is for everyone, but for me, having a family that you love and loves you, that's ultimately the key. I mean, money to a point, everybody should want to be comfortable, but there's excess, do you know what I mean? And people can get caught up in that excess and not knowing when to stop, and you're constantly upgrading your lifestyle, you constantly have a new car, new house, new better holidays, and it becomes empty in the end.
Well, I know you kind of used to say, like, when it gets to 30 mil, you're off. How has that changed and why has that changed?
You know why I said that? Because I thought that to get to 20 mil from when we was at 5 mil, for argument's sake, I thought things would internally change, like it would be way more corporate, I'd have to have way more staff. And again, going from reading and just experience, I realise you just need better. You don't need more. You need more really, really clever minds to come up with ideas and execute those ideas. So you just need to have better ideas and back those better ideas more and be clever with what you do.
So would you say that MDV's growth has been less about kind of like pushing scaling in terms of like, we'll hire X amount more people and that will enhance our capacity by this much, and more about just leaning in more to the existing things you've been doing?
Yeah, I think that's a myth. You know, people say we're growing, so we're hiring. Again, of course, naturally we have to hire some people, but it's more about analysing your data, understanding your customer and serving them better, doubling down on what works and eradicating what doesn't. I think people going back to social, it's all influenced by social. Everyone gets caught up in the top line numbers, the growth figures. And again, it may seem hypocritical here because my growth and figures are good, but the bottom line moves faster than those top line figures. And that's testament to really understanding your customer and serving them better. So there's a business, you can have a business which turn over 1 million and makes 500k profit, and you can have a business which turn over 10 million and makes the same profit. I know which one I would choose, the smaller one. Do you know what I mean? So what do they say? Revenue's vanity and profit's sanity. And in order to be profitable, you have to have good margins and make people pay full price. And that comes from strategy and understanding who you're serving.
For some practical tips for people trying to build their brand socials, what would you recommend?
Similar to what I just mentioned, understanding who you're trying to serve. I think it's good to start as a niche, because then you can really, really be intensely focused on a small group and serve them, and then slowly expand if necessary.
You know, I think that people always have this false perception that a niche is small. With the amount of people in any niche, there'll be an exception when you get smaller and smaller and smaller, but actually the majority of niches are huge.
Yeah, huge enough to have a 25 million worth of revenue from. Can you be a billionaire company with a niche? Probably not. Yeah, and on the contrary, MDV is quite broad in its customer base, so it also becomes very difficult to market. If we've got menswear street style and womenswear classy wear, how do you put that on a social media and make it cohesive? It's notoriously difficult. How do you do a photo shoot or campaign and kind of capture both customer sets within one campaign? Very difficult. And it's a challenge that we find, and our menswear customer, womenswear customer are very different. If I was just looking objectively, I would make them cohesive. But as far as the business is concerned, the menswear kind of street style is what people are looking for. So why would I try and compete with people who have got more money, broad appeal, more well-known? I have to serve my niche. And womenswear, fortunately, I can serve all of them. I can serve classy wear, dressy wear, street style, and we can be different in all of those aspects. So a niche is a great way to start.
I want to talk about the hustle a bit. Firstly, what does kind of hustling mean to you?
Yeah, as I said, I think if you are CEO of a £50 million company, you're going to have to hustle hard. But that's population 0.2% of the population, so it's such a minority. And that's not for everyone, as I said. So for the majority of people, this hustle doesn't even need to take place. If you've got a 9-to-5 job, understand what moves are needed and be effective in those, and then have your evenings free, have your weekends free. There's a lot of people who actually like to appear to work hard just to say they're working hard, but they're not really doing anything. Sometimes I even think to myself, like, I know that takes 2 hours. Why is it taking you all day? Do you know what I mean? No, I do think that, and I think people like to appear busy.
But it's rewarded, and it's not just rewarded now, it's expected. If you're, like, there's no glory, it seems, in someone who works 1 hour to achieve something, even though that's more productive, that's far more effective, that's far more productive, it's far more efficient, it's not rewarded in terms of, like, the what you see online. Like, it's always rewarded to have, like, that grind and that constant hard work and all of that is en masse a lot more... Yeah, rewarding in that sense.
Yeah, again, to who I think in the social world, yeah, people go, oh, she or he's hard worker, I respect their hustle, blah, de blah, de blah. But to someone who is efficient, they'll probably say, why are you working so hard? You could do that in half the time, do you know what I mean? So if you work with people who are successful, genuinely, and efficient, I guarantee they'll be the first person, people, to say, be more efficient, stop wasting your time. Hard work is a necessity, that's bottom line, but... smart work is much more important. If you can work smart and you can work hard, you're going to move mountains, and that's the truth.
I'd love to know what you would tell the you that had just started MDV, that you kind of wish you knew or that you think would help you along the way.
So I would have done a lot of things differently, but I think in order to get to this position, you have to make all of the errors along the way. So even if I told myself when I was younger, I wouldn't understand what I'm saying to myself. And I think that goes back to when you have an older person, or not necessarily older, more experienced person tell a less experienced person what they should be doing. They may take it in, they may try and listen, but you won't fully understand until you've connected all the dots on the way up. So, for example, I used to think you'd have to create really, really innovative, crazy products to move the needle. And it gets people attention, but those things don't sell. Mm-hmm. So I used to spend so long in fit sessions and coming up with ideas. And then when you look at the sales data, specifically for menswear, I guess, men are simple by nature, typically, in terms of how they dress, etc. Men want simple stuff. They don't want exuberant. There's obviously a minority that does, but then transfer that into women. Women are way more tasteful, in my opinion, way more, they dress better, typically. They take more experiments. So transferring that kind of design philosophy into women's wear, then you get the reward. So I guess it's going back to what I said, just understanding where your hard work yields the results, because you can work simultaneously hard in two different fields. Let's say, for example, what's a growing, sustainability is a growing field now, and there's brands like Veja, even Pangea. These brands are growing super fast, but 10 years ago, if they come in with the same trainer or with the same tracksuit, they're not. So time and again, and then understanding where that kind of slipstream of success comes from and just focusing your efforts on that. So I don't think there's anything you can tell your younger self.
You have to go through it.
You have to go through it.
I think one thing I would always, kind of not even necessarily encourage, but you need to acknowledge that there needs to be a commitment to learning from those things, because you can be hit with the same thing over and over again. And you need to be able to start actually, you know, as you said at the beginning, taking that responsibility in order to learn. Otherwise, you're just going to be like, keep on getting hit with the same thing. And you can learn faster that way. But I guess for you then, it's about working out what working smart is for you in your industry, in what you're doing at any one time.
Yeah, like kind of like having an out of body experience, like analyzing what you're doing and why you're doing it, and asking yourself the key questions all the time. I always question myself. Mm. It may even seem sometimes to people I work with like I change my mind a lot, but it's not a change of mind for indecisiveness. It's just that I've prompted myself with another question, which is opposed my initial theory, and that's how I continuously learn, because I may believe something today and tomorrow I might think I got it wrong, and I can openly hold my hands up and say, yeah, I missed a variable which made me have a wrong perspective. Do you know what I mean? So I think people must question everything they're doing when they wake up to when they fall asleep. Why are you doing this? Are you getting results from it, or are you doing it just because it's the world says you should be doing? Can I make it more efficient? There's so many questions you ask yourself, and that's probably one of my strengths with people within work. I always question them, not in a trying to prove them wrong aspect. I'm like, why do you think this? And sometimes people like trip up and go, and I'm not doing it for that reason. I'm asking them, how did they get to that end opinion? What variables did they put in their mind to come out with that? And then sometimes on the other side, people go, oh yeah, I missed that variable. Or they say something to me and I'm like, I missed that variable. So I'm learning from them simultaneously. Do you know what I mean? So it's all about the questions you ask and the principles you follow and trying to always come to the best decision. And sometimes that's why it's good to have a senior team of open-minded, also from a different perspective, different background. Someone might be not love fashion, someone might love fashion, some may be younger than us, some may be older than us. And then you come together and everyone's got an open mind. Everyone's trying to come to the best answer. And I'll always miss variables, and they will always miss variables, and that's what a good team does. They fill in the gaps.
So you've obviously been incredibly successful in a number of things. I want to get to a bit of the kind of reality behind it. So I guess, you know, things like, do you remember the hardest day at work you've ever had?
Every week becomes the hardest day at work. That's funny, actually, because I remember having, this girl's no longer with us, but no longer with us, no longer at the company. I remember saying to me, this was when the company was baby, like 2 years old. She was like, do you know when it gets bigger, will I have to work this hard? And I was like, maybe not. You're like, you can hire people. And that's a myth. I think the bigger you get, the harder you work. And if you don't, the business will fail. Every week gets harder. But I think stress is like a muscle. The more you train a muscle, the stronger it gets, and you can lift heavy weights. And I think stress is like that. You don't feel the same stress. I think sometimes people may look and go, oh, I could deal with that, or I want to be that person, live a day in their life, and you probably think, hell no. They'll blow their mind, they'll be so stressed. But to that person who's living that life, it's just normality, so they don't feel the stress, do you know what I mean?
But it's a key part of entrepreneurship is the amount of responsibility that lays on you as a, well, not even just entrepreneurship, but as a CEO or as a founder or as anyone who has hired people. It comes, you know, it's an extra layer on the stress that with every stress, it's not just you that gets affected. It's also a huge amount of other people. It's your future. It's their, you know, past reputation, like all of this. And I feel like no matter the problems, no matter the scale of them, that's, you know, that's something that's always prevailing when you do have a business or when you do are self-employed or whatever it might be.
Even as a high-level employee, you know, if you've got a team underneath you, the pressure is real. The pressure comes from above. The pressure comes from yourself.
And what generally gets you through the shit when it hits the fan?
I don't see it as hits the fan. I see, okay, opportunity to learn. Do you know what I mean? Maybe when I was younger, but like I said, when you've been released or you lose games or you fail in football, for argument's sake, or in business every year, there's something that goes wrong. It's just normality now. I wait for it. Not in a negative state of mind, but I always say when things are going too well, what's around the corner? And that's, for me, great because it shows a new chapter that can boom. But there's always, it's part of business, you know what I mean? And part of life, forget business, is part of life.
Obviously, you are living the dream in many ways, but I'm sure there have, and I know there have been sacrifices behind the scenes in general too. What sacrifices have you made?
I don't see my family half as much as I should. That's definitely a sacrifice. I think even my friends, I'm alone most of the time. Not by choice, to be honest, because I think, you know, it's a lot dealing with a lot of people every week. So on the weekend, sometimes I just like to be alone and take it easy. I think, again, 20s, like, it's a difficult period because it's the age where you want to have the most fun and you've got your youth on your side. But it's also the years where you have to kind of set up the rest of your life. So in my aspect, I think I've had a nice balance, but I don't go clubbing. I don't go for drinks or, you know, go to the pub like most people. And I don't know if that's by choice or by habit in the sense of I'm so used to being alone that being around people makes me feel like energy sapping. But I see it as, okay, sacrifice most of my 20s in that aspect. And from 30 onwards, I'd never have to think about money and have all the time. And that's what I think of money as, like money buys freedom. Every year I put in now, maybe 10 on the other side, do you know what I mean? Or 10 years of freedom effectively. So small price to pay in the grand scheme of things.
What habits would you say have been the most important to contribute to your success?
The habit of self-analysis, of constantly like understanding why I do what I do and how to improve it. Consistency of doing those things on the set days, even when I'm on holiday. My friends will vouch, like, I'll be the first person up on the laptop. And of course, on holidays, you can't be working all the time, but I make sure I can kind of still keep myself in the routine of, okay, when I go back home, I can slot straight back in, do you know what I mean?
Do you think is that kind of a good balance? Do you ever think that that's kind of too much, that you should step away from that a bit to improve your work?
No, because as I said, it's natural to me, it doesn't feel like
what's
work.
What's worked for you?
Yeah, if it doesn't feel like work, and that's the best advice I can give everyone is like, do something that doesn't feel like work, and you're being paid for it, win-win, do you know what I mean? And there's growth, that's an amazing thing. No amount of money can substitute enjoyment and waking up every day with enthusiasm.
Before we move on in those kind of questions, I'm just going to do a few hardly working quick fire questions. Number one, Netflix or a walk?
Netflix.
Number two, after work, a cup of tea or a glass of wine?
Neither.
Okay. No liquids for Reese. Letting off steam, a workout or a night out?
Neither. I'll go workout because I've started going to the gym now. So yeah.
Are you good at taking time off?
No.
Do you want to get better?
No. If I want to, I will. I don't feel like I need to take time off. I don't feel like I don't ever feel burnt out.
And within that, I guess, like, what does self-care then look like for you?
I think what you eat, what you intake, working out, reading, brain stimulation.
So do you think it's then important for you to have that kind of like holistic view of what makes your body run better?
Yeah, even, you know, I'm not a TV watcher, but if I do watch shows, they'll always be teaching me something. They'll always be making me think. And my mind's always working, or And that's the pure essence of humanity and evolution.
Well, then I guess with that, you know, when you were talking about commitment and ambition and all of that to the workplace, do you then think that, because I think there is space for people who don't necessarily have a dream to be super ambitious or to be working all the time and all of that. And often those people can be incredibly consistent in what they're doing without necessarily having it as like one big goal to be CEO or to be head of department or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And every business and all in the world needs those people. The bare minimum is absolutely fine. If, like I said, if you work a 9-to-5 and even if you work half the day and you get what you need to get done, no problem. Absolutely amazing.
So when I was Googling the variety of kind of hustle porn type quotes, I found this one. I'm going to read it out to you. Don't hustle yourself into an early grave. Work hard, but rest harder. Take time to laugh with friends and family. Express gratitude for the things you have in this moment while you work to achieve more. What do you think?
I think you can stress yourself into an early grave, not necessarily work. Stress is absolutely key management. If you sense yourself getting stressed, fall back. As I said, friends, family, the loved ones, that should energise anybody. So it's definitely important to be around that. And every time I do is go around my friends and family, I feel better. So I should do it more often, to be fair. And yeah, take time off to re-energise, of course. If you feel like you need it, always do it.
I guess within that, what are a few things that you'd like to work on over the next year or so in terms of rest, balance, working, all of that?
As I said then, I think I should spend more time with the people I love. I definitely can. I guess from my perspective, it's like when I've been in the office all week and people constantly asking me questions or calling me.
Yeah, you need that time.
Yeah, I need that time to re-energise. Like sometimes I sit in silence, and this sounds crazy to most people. I sit in silence for a whole day. And I just, but by the end of the day, I feel like I'm back to life.
No, fair enough. And to finish off, for anyone who wanted to, you know, replicate your success in terms of level, in terms of what you've done, and who kind of have that as their dream or who look up to you specifically, what words would you give them to live by?
Understand the sacrifices, be self-aware, live and breathe the industry, and aim to be the best. If you are truly ambitious, you shouldn't set your targets too low. You've got to set them so big, and then you make a strategy to get to there. I think that's the biggest mistake everybody makes who's ambitious. They probably think too small, myself included at times. As much as I think I tweeted about 2015, by 30 I'll be worth 100 million. And I had a call with my advisors the other day, and they said to me, you need to rethink your goal again because that's practically there now. And they said it to me, and I was like, that's so true. Do you know what I mean? Like, what do I think of next? What is the goal? Because it can't be money. If you've got monetary targets, use it to force yourself to be excellent, but don't think you're going to be happy from it.
Yeah.
You may be able to buy a few more things, but as I said, that'll be empty once you've had it. Do you know what I mean?
Might turn it into a coin. Yeah. One of those things with lines in the background.
Sure.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today. It has been great to listen to your wisdom and your story, and I know that lots of people will learn a lot from it.
Cool, thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Working Hard, Hardly Working. I have been Grace Beverley, and you can find me at Grace Beverley, L-E-Y, remember that one, on Instagram and on LinkedIn, if you are that way inclined. Please, after listening to this episode, it really, really helps if you can leave a review, particularly on Apple Podcasts. That seems to be the best way to help out a podcast at the moment. But please like the episode, subscribe, share it, tag me, tag your friends. Do whatever you want to do, but spread the word and let me know what you'd like to see next on any of my social platforms. Just get in touch. I'd love to talk about some more interesting things. So shoot your suggestions my way, and I will see you next time.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.